If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
The most exciting part of a vacation stay at a home rental? Easy. It's being greeted upon arrival with a rusted lockbox affixed to the underside of a stranger's condo. Yeah, you simply twist knobs, click gears, jiggle it, and then rip it off its moorings, and voila! Your prize is a key to a questionable home rental and maybe tetanus. When you just want to get your vacation started by actually getting into your room, it matters where you stay. At Hilton, we deliver your key right to your phone on the Hilton Honors app. Hilton, for the stay.
This is your typical radio ad while eating a Crunch Bar.
This is Automatic of Otto's Used Cars. This weekend only, we're having a whale! Bring the kids. See for yourself. It is huge. Gonna make a big splash. No other dealer can say they have a whale like this.
When things sound dull, turn up the fun with Crunch.
Sergeant and Mrs. Smith, you are going to love this house.
Is that a tub in the kitchen?
There's no field manual for finding the right home. But when you do, USAA Homeowners Insurance can help protect it the right way. Restrictions apply.
Tell Mr. Trump you want to meet him.
I love you, Trump!
Nobody use any racial slurs. Nobody call me the N-word. It's microaggressions.
He does not support Mexicans, not Jews, not Muslims, not blacks. No one but his own kind, the rich.
When Trump says we'll lose our country, that's not just a, I mean, maybe he's being a little extreme.
Hello and welcome to TrumpCast, the show about the failed casino operator Donald Trump. I'm Jacob Weisberg. So what do you call someone who's paid to work against the policies and interests of the United States, in secret, on behalf of foreign governments? A turncoat? A traitor? A spy? In Washington, they usually prefer the more genteel term, lobbyist. But today's show is about someone whose work goes well beyond the normally corrupt work of lobbying. His name is Paul Manafort. Is Manafort the most reprehensible person in American politics? Offhand, it's hard for me to think of anybody worse. The list of thugs and torturers and crooks whose reputations Manafort has been paid to buff up runs to many pages. Manafort's client list includes Ferdinand Marcos in the Philippines, Mobutu Sese Seko in Zaire, Jonas Savimbi in Angola, Viktor Yanukovych in Ukraine, Donald Trump in Mar-a-Lago. Wait, what's that he said? Donald Trump? Why would Donald Trump hire a guy whose last job was promoting Vladimir Putin's hostile takeover of Ukraine? That's the topic of today's show. But before we get to that, let's hear the tweets.
So many false and phony TV commercials being broadcast in Indiana reminds me of Florida, where thousands were put up. I won in a landslide. Bernie Sanders has been treated terribly by the Democrats, both with the delegates and otherwise. He should show them and run as an independent. How bad is the New York Times? The most inaccurate coverage constantly, always trying to belittle. Papers lost its way. Wow. The ridiculous deal made between Lion Ted Cruz and 1-for-42 John Kasich has just blown up. What a dumb deal. Dead on arrival. I'm in Indiana, where we just had a great rally. Fantastic people staying at a Holiday Inn Express, new and clean. Not bad.
Frank Foer is the former editor of The New Republic and a frequent contributor to Slate. He wrote an investigative piece in Slate this week about Manafort. Frank, welcome to TrumpCast.
Good to be here, Jake.
Frank, in the intro, I listed some of the dictators Paul Manafort has worked for. Why is this guy such a good get for Donald Trump?
Paul Manafort is
an operative who is at a much higher level than some of the rinky-dink characters who were initially in the Trump campaign. Trump was such a fanciful candidate that he wasn't able to attract top-flight talent to work on his campaign.
It's kind of a clown show over there. Yeah,
right. And then when he started to do well, the Republican establishment still didn't really believe that he was going to ever capture the nomination. And so even then, top flight Republican talent wouldn't flock to him. And so eventually he's able to get a hold of this Manafort character, because Manafort has a very, very long association with Donald Trump. He represented Donald Trump as his lobbyist when Trump was trying to protect his Atlantic City casino interests from competition in the form of Indian gaming. And Manafort lives in Trump Tower. And so he needed a character like Manafort in order to help him impose the discipline that he needed on his ad spending and on the ground game that he has to build in all these states, as well as the accumulation of delegates in a potentially contested convention. And Manafort is a skilled operative who has a lot of experience dealing with all these many facets of campaigning.
But as a lobbyist, Frank, Manafort was like known as the sleaziest of the sleazy, right? I mean, he's like the lobbyist for the damned, like the dictators, you know, nobody else will work for in Washington. He represents.
Yeah. He's not just a sleazy lobbyist. Those are a dime a dozen in Washington. He's somebody who is constantly reinventing the lobbying game to be ever more sleazy.
So what did he do? I mean, who are clients that he represented that lobbyists with some compunctions? It's a sort of a funny thought, but it might have turned out.
Well, so like I said, he really specialized in representing the despots of the world. And so in the 1980s, he represented the likes of Ferdinand Marcos in the Philippines, all sorts of African dictators in Somalia and Kenya, Mobutu Sese Seko. He represented the Angolese rebel Jonas Savimbi, who was notorious for recklessly laying landmines all across his country. Savimbi would burn families alive who he believed were guilty of witchcraft. And what Manafort did so skillfully was that he would take these horrible creatures, he would get them booked on American television, and he would coach them to speak the language of the Cold War. And then he would take them through the byways of conservative Washington, and he would dress them up with just the right libertarian, anti-communist rhetoric. So somebody like Savimbi, who was really just such a monster, would come to Washington, and then he would talk about capitalism. And Savimbi was a trained Maoist, yet when he would go to the Heritage Foundation or the American Enterprise Institute, he would get hailed as this great freedom fighter.
We call that a pivot on the Trump campaign.
Yeah, a pivot. He was professionalized. He was only able to do that because Manafort, like his partner Roger Stone, was kind of born within the conservative movement. They came of political age in the late 1970s as Reagan was starting to rise. They'd been operatives in the young college Republican and young Republican movement. And so they knew all the characters who were making their way through conservative Washington, and they were able to exploit those relationships, and they were able to stroke conservative erogenous zones in just the right sort of way on behalf of the scumbags of the world.
Yeah. And speaking of scumbags, I mean, more recently, like in the 21st century, he got very involved in Ukraine, and he was working for Viktor Yanukovych. Can you explain who that guy was and what he was doing for him?
So Ukraine has been engaged over the course of the last 15 years in this real tug of war between the forces in the country who are trying to bring Ukraine into the European orbit and the forces in the country who are trying to bring it into the Russian orbit. And Vladimir Putin has made an enormous priority of trying to create a series of client states on the periphery of his country. And Ukraine always had to be the most important of those client states in his geostrategic worldview, because Ukraine is such a big, important country. And so Putin invested a whole lot in trying to create a political class in that country that was sympathetic to him. And the most important politician, pro-Putin politician there, was a guy called Viktor Yanukovych. Now, Viktor Yanukovych is not the most attractive character. He had a childhood or teenage history as a criminal and had the stench of corruption about him. And furthermore, he was kind of a gruff Soviet-style politician. And so he was briefly elected prime minister in 2002 and then ran to be president of the country in 2004. And despite his efforts to fix the election through massive voter fraud, ended up losing.
And wasn't that when his opponent got poisoned with dioxin? Exactly.
And preventing Yanukovych from becoming president of the country became the touchstone of the Orange Revolution, which was a great symbol of the country trying to throw off the yoke of post-Soviet style dictatorship. So Yanukovych was a hopeless politician who, through an oligarch friend of his, recruited Manafort to come in to try to salvage his image and rehabilitate his career. And Manafort was able to come in and do precisely that. And he was able to do it by bringing a lot of the techniques that he had learned from American politics. And he was able to do the most amazing thing, which was to humanize the grayest, most grim of politicians. He taught him how to wave his hand. He taught him how to feel people's pain. He stage managed these events, and savvy Ukrainian journalists were able to point out the moments that there were parallels between Yanukovych rallies and the Republican National Conventions that Manafort had been brought in to run. And so amazingly, really amazingly, and with a bit of help from the inept Orange Revolutionary politicians he was trying to depose, Yanukovych was able to stage this very, very unlikely political comeback. And Manafort was at the center of it. And you know, Manafort was able to assert control over this pro-Putin circle, where you had a bunch of oligarchs who were incredibly ruthless characters, yet they all ended up deferring to Manafort as the source of wisdom. And so in 2010, Yanukovych is elected president of Ukraine thanks to Manafort. And thanks to Manafort, you have to say that Putin was able to extend his control to the Ukraine.
Well, so here's another Trump connection. Trump calls up his friend Vladimir and says, "Who would you recommend to help me out? I need to upgrade my campaign staff." And he says, "Well, my favorite oligarchs have really enjoyed working with Paul Manafort."
Right. You say that facetiously, and we have no evidence to suggest that it's true yet. I mean, it really, there is this uncanny convergence that I think we need to treat really seriously, where Donald Trump has a long history of sucking up to Vladimir Putin, and he's ended up being surrounded by a series of advisors who come out of the Kremlin's orbit. So one of his other advisors is a guy called Carter Page, who was instrumental in Gazprom extending its business, and he's now among Trump's Russian advisors. And you have this guy Manafort, who's just spent a lot of time in the Putin world promoting Putin politicians.
They're all friends. One of Manafort's friends is this oligarch called Oleg Deripaska. And in your piece, you have this story about Manafort basically ripping him off, getting him to invest this money, and then like disappearing with it and going underground. That strikes me as maybe a foolhardy thing to do.
Yes. But this was, I got a series of documents that were filed in a Virginia court just as I was closing this piece. And the Washington Post seems to have gotten the same documents at about the same time. And so they reported on this as well. And so Manafort and his business partners set up a private equity fund where a $200 million private equity fund where this Russian oligarch, Oleg Deripaska, is the primary investor. And Deripaska, it should be noted, wasn't allowed into the United States for a large number of years because the U.S. government was suspicious of his ties to Russian organized crime. He was alleged to have bugged an Israeli cabinet minister. There was a RICO case against him in the Southern District of New York for having threatened to kill two other aluminum tycoons. So he was not a pleasant figure. And he's not the type of guy you would want to steal from. Yet, it seems like that's basically that Manafort sets up this fund. Deripaska invests in the fund. And a couple of years later, as the financial crisis hits, Deripaska is wondering what happens to his money. And so he asks Manafort and his partners for an audit of the fund. That doesn't happen. And then when he wants to come get his money back, Deripaska is suddenly unable to track down Manafort. And at about that same time, there were pieces being run in Politico asking where in the world was Paul Manafort. And at the time, it was just this curious mystery about this political consultant who nobody had heard from for a couple months. yet now it all seems to make sense.
I'm not sure you've convinced me this guy's a genius. When he's not ripping off the Russian oligarchs, he's telling Donald Trump that he shouldn't go on TV so much, which is probably equally dangerous.
Well, I mean, if you think about his genius this way, he was able to rip off a Russian oligarch, survive to tell about it, and resurrect himself by running the presidential campaign of the Republican nominee. If that's not a certain form of genius, I don't know what is.
So there's been conflict clearly inside the Trump campaign between Manafort and the old guard, Corey Lewandowski, who doesn't want the help from the Washington experts. What's happening, do you think? Who's gonna survive this episode of Celebrity Apprentice?
Right. So if we do extend the reality show metaphor that you've just set up, I think that he's probably going to try to maintain a state of healthy competition between the two of those guys because, A, he probably finds it entertaining, and B, it probably suits him to always have another advisor with an opposing point of view who he could gravitate to find affirmation for whatever principle, whatever strategy, whatever position he's craving affirmation for on that day of the week.
Frank, thanks for joining me on TrumpCast today.
Pleasure.
That's it for today's episode of TrumpCast. The show is produced by Henry Milofsky and Jason DeLeon. Slate's executive producer is Steve Lichtai. Andy Bowers is our chief content officer. Thanks as always to John DiDomenico, our voice of Donald Trump. And from The Daily Show, here's Black Donald Trump. I'm Jacob Weisberg. Thanks for tuning in to TrumpCast.
360, what's good?
Man, if Megyn Kelly stopped talking about me on her show, her ratings would drop like a rock. Well, I gotta go, man. The beat about to drop.
I have a great relationship with the blacks.
The blacks.
Politicians all talking to watch. I was down at 7-Eleven.
I was there.
Spent almost nothing on my run for president. All the women flirted with me on The Apprentice. If Ivanka were my daughter, then perhaps I'd be dating her. We have to have a wall done. Who's doing the raping? We have to have a wall done. Who's doing the raping? Check me out, Democrats, they love me. Check me out, these Muslims love me.
Oh, yeah.
Stop hating these women, love me. These gays love me. Everybody love me.
Told you.
Check me out, Megyn Kelly, she love me. Check me out, illegals, they love me. What it do, these veterans love me. Protesters love me. Everybody love me.
Told you.
I'm so good looking. I'm really rich.
Hello, listener. Dahlia Lithwick here, host of Amicus, that's Slate's podcast on the courts and the law and democracy and the rule of law. This May, our team will be publishing a special project that we are calling How Originalism Ate the Law. This neutral and academic-sounding methodology of looking at the law is, in fact, anything but neutral. Originalism is to the conservative legal movement what peanut butter is to jelly. As we're going to show you over the course of this project, originalism has been both cover and calling for conservative justices and judges to radically overhaul the lives of millions of Americans. And while they claim to be the apolitical interpreters of the Constitution and its authors' intents, they have overturned Roe, radically expanded gun rights, and eviscerated voting rights. Across Slate.com and the Amicus podcast, we're going to be tackling questions like, where did originalism come from? Why has it taken over? Are progressive originalists really a thing? And am I allowed to have an opinion on originalism? Spoiler, the answer to that last question, you are. To celebrate the launch of this big project, we are running a special 2-week-long free trial of Slate Plus on Apple Podcasts. As a member, you'll get exclusive episodes from How Originalism Ate the Law, plus ad-free listening to all of your favorite Slate podcasts. Join now by clicking Try Free at the top of the Amicus show page or visit slate.com/amicusplus to get access wherever you listen.